It is well accepted that Jaws is an all-time great film, but its progeny don't rank nearly as high. Two True Freaks is proud to present Is It Jaws, where Paul Spitero and Sean Whalen are joined by an all-star list of guest hosts to review old and new films and place them on the Jaws scale, where they're ranked from Jaws to Jaws 4. Of course, for the purposes of the show, that scale does take some liberties with their actual ratings. Sure, movies that are given the ranking of Jaws are considered classic films with few flaws, if any. A ranking of Jaws 2 indicates that the film is very good and worthy of repeated viewings. A Jaws 3 ranking indicates the film was okay, but that's all. A Jaws 4 means it's ranked as a bad movie. Oh, and if you ever saw Back to the Future Part 2, you know that there's a Jaws 19. That ranking indicates that the movie is so incredibly bad that it's actually fun to watch as a result. So please join Paul and Sean as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
Are you being serious right now?
Yeah.
You'd let me interview you as Superman?
Sure.
Ready?
Let's do it, Cronkite.
Superman.
Miss Lane.
Recently, you've come under a lot of fire for what some
might...
It's a lot. Today, the Secretary of Defense said he was going to look into your actions. That's funny.
My actions? I stopped a war.
Maybe.
Not maybe. I did.
In effect, you illegally entered a country.
This is how you're going to be?
I'm not the one being interviewed, Superman. Did you consult with the president?
No.
You seemingly acting as a representative of the United States.
I wasn't representing anybody except for me.
Around the world.
And doing good.
I would question myself in the same situation and consider the consequences.
People were going to die.
Hey, buddy. Eyes up here.
Your choices. Your actions. That's what makes you who you are.
Superman. He's not a man. He's an it. It's somehow become the focal point of the entire world's conversation. I will not accept that.
I cleaned your boots. I'll go get them for you.
Dog.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Jaws? I'm Paul Spitero. I am joined, as always, by Mr. Sean Whalen.
It is a pleasure to be here, buddy.
It's a pleasure to have you, and it's a pleasure to have this discussion, which we are here today to talk about the new Superman movie with two of the biggest Superman fans I know, Mr. Scott H. Gardner.
Hello.
Hello. And Mr. David A. Pascarella.
How's it going?
It's going good. And we have all seen the new Superman movie. And if you haven't seen it yet, pause your player, go see it, and then come back, because we're going to spoil the heck out of it here. I think I'm going to talk for everybody for a moment and say we were all very happy with this movie. Now, there are dissenting opinions, and we'll get to that at some point. In fact, you know what? I'm going to jump right out of the chute and start with the dissenting opinion, because then as we discuss it, we could talk about the issues that, he presented. Our good friend, Mr. Chris Tyler, was asked to be here tonight, but he couldn't. He had a prior obligation. So he provided me with just a quick text message where he said, "Man of Steel was a glass sandwich. New one was a turd sandwich. I didn't want to eat either. New one was the worst parts of Superman 2 on steroids for 2 hours. Hated the version of Jor-El and Lara, even though I know there's comics with that take. And the snotty Supergirl was like another middle finger right at the end. Felt like a parody to me. I'm glad others are enjoying it, but it's not for me, and probably the last comic book flick I'll be seeing for the foreseeable future." So, pretty strong. You know, Chris and I were going back and forth on it, and honestly, the reason I wanted him on here was because I knew he was a dissenting opinion, because I knew we were all pretty happy with it. And I knew that if he came on with us, you know, nothing was going to get out of control. Nobody was going to get angry at each other. We'd be able to have, you know, a relatively adult conversation about why he didn't like it and why we did. I don't think there'd be anybody attacking anybody else, which, you know, in this internet age, you never know what you're going to get as far as that goes. So I was disappointed that he couldn't make it, but I appreciated him giving me his soundbite and telling me what he thought of it. And I'm going to just say right off the bat, I don't think his criticisms are invalid, but I just don't agree with them because they didn't have that impact on me. That said, I'm going to question the Jor-El and Lara versions, because I don't know if we got what are they going to be the true versions in this universe yet. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. And I also question the validity of the Supergirl that was presented in this. That was one of the aspects of this movie that I didn't care for. But again, we'll talk about this as we go on. I'm just going to say I saw this, just give my general overview. I saw it just the other day, saw it with my wife and my stepdaughter. They both said it was good, but clearly did not enjoy it as much as I did. And this is where I'm going to say I think this movie may have been for the non-comic reader, non-comic fan, non-comic knowledge person, just a little bit too much thrown at them at once without some explanations. I think that they had a problem with the Justice Gang. I think they had a problem with Metamorpho because they just didn't know who these characters were, and they probably weren't given enough in the way of explanation as to who they are and what they were doing. So I do get... I'm getting my criticism out of the way first because I'm going to fawn over the movie later, but I do accept that it's an imperfect movie in that regard. I get the feeling that probably if James Gunn wanted to make the movie that would have been needed in order to have all that extra, it probably would have been a 3-hour movie instead of a movie that was shortly over 2 hours or just a little bit over 2 hours.
And you know what? I'm sorry to cut in, but I would have been absolutely happy with that, because you'll remember the original Superman is a very, very long movie. So I would have been perfectly fine with that if this had
run. I would have too, but I don't know.
3 hours, 4 hours, you know, as long as it's good.
Put it on for 24 hours. I think we all would have been fine with that, but I don't know if we're the typical non-comic book reading audience. And I don't know if the typical non-comic book reading audience would have been fine with that. But I'm not sure there was a right answer for them other than cutting out some of this extra stuff. And some of the stuff that we'd be cutting out, I loved.
I am right. Hoping there is an extended cut that comes out at some point.
I would love that.
There were some things that they introduced here that I thought that they did really well that were new, like Mr. Terrific. I thought he was very well introduced in this. Where I know what you're saying about the Justice Gang, but I thought they gave him, especially with pairing up with Lois, some really good moments.
I thought he had good moments. I could see how
they threw a lot at a casual audience, but my wife loved Mr. Terrific and loved that whole sequence, and she didn't know anything about him.
I'm not sure that they explained enough about Mr. Terrific. Now, you know, what little I've read of Mr. Terrific, and I haven't read all that much, but Scott and I recently covered issue number one of his New 52 series, and one of the things they beat you over the head with is that he's the third smartest man in the DC universe after Lex Luthor and Bruce Wayne. I don't think it would have hurt to put a little exposition to that effect in here.
No. I wanted to bring that up at some point in this, that you'll notice he did not say that at all.
I don't think he should have said it, but I think it should have been said. Not, and they don't even have to say that specific comment, but they should have, like, they didn't really give you any background about just how smart he's supposed to be. They could have just said he's one of the smartest men in the world and left it at that. But I think they should have given that because they, you know, you just had this guy and you know, he was talking a little trash at some points. And I don't know if the casual viewer just knows what his whole power set and intelligence level is supposed to be.
But they don't need to, because that scene that showcases him gives you everything that you need to know about Mr. Terrific, because he is kind of a mystery up to that point. But then once we get to that scene and he's walking through the camp and one of Luther's goons says, "Who's this guy?" And somebody says, "Oh, he's the smart one," dismissing him as, "Oh, he's just the brains." And then that's when he kicks all their asses. So yeah, I thought that was great. But when we covered that issue, I remember having a problem with him.
Well, because they beat you over the head with that. And that.
I felt like you kind of took me to task about, you know, when I said that, you know, smart people, you know, people that smart don't go around bragging about it. And you were like, "Oh yeah, they do," but he doesn't in the movie. He just does his thing. He doesn't have to brag because, as he says, "I'm Mr. Goddamn Terrific, Mr. Terrific." I thought that was great.
And you know who the actor is, just by the way?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he I've seen him in a lot of other stuff. I saw him in X-Men First Class. He was
That's the key role I was going to say. He was Darwin.
Darwin. But if you ever watch For All Mankind, he's kind of a who's the guy that the president just started having a feud with, the rocket guy,
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk, yeah, he's kind of like that. He's kind of like a cross between like him and like Jeff Bezos kind of thing in that show. But he's like the third party rocket guy that gets them into. Anyway, he's excellent on that show.
I'll believe it. You know what? The only thing I was familiar with him offhand was as Darwin, and I loved him as Darwin. I thought he was great in that. But it is a very, very different part from Mr. Terrific. And until I saw that he was the same guy, I didn't realize he was.
Right.
As Darwin, you know, he's kind of very smallish, you know. His superpower is that he can, you know, adapt to anything, but he's not a big muscle guy. In this, no. You know, he was pretty pumped.
I liked seeing him through Lois's eyes. Like that sequence, I think because of the mystery aspect of it, we got to see who he was from Lois's sense of wonder to the whole thing. Because if you watch in that sequence, you watch what like Lois's reaction to everything, it was pretty darn cool.
So I guess we'll start with I gave my 2-second review, and I should give you guys each a chance to just give your initial impressions before we go off. So, Sean?
I really liked it the first time. I loved it the second time. I saw it twice. The second time I saw it, there's an old theater here in Cleveland. I mean, it's right now, it was in Cleveland, called the Capitol Theater. It's like 100 years old. The Siegel Schuster Society did a screening, and like Brian Michael Bendis was there, Philip Kennedy Johnson was there. They had a number of guys, I'm not going to do it justice, but they had a number of comic writers that were there, and they did Kraus Savell did a podcast afterwards. I went to that showing because of that event, but not knowing, because I hadn't seen it yet, that I would really want to see it a second time. And the second time, I think just kind of getting past the whole, initial kind of, I've seen that what the story was and all the beats that were in there. It was really cool to see it the second time. I will say this, and it's something I want to make sure I put in here. I do think this movie should be a template for how you handle trailers for a movie, because I loved that a vast majority of what they were showing in the trailers was actually in the very beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of the story and where it was all going that unfolded as we watched it as viewers. I feel like nowadays trailers, especially when you're doing 2, 3, and 4 trailers, they give you way too much of the film now. I like that I didn't feel I had that with this. And I think it led to more of my enjoyment of the film because I just got to
totally agree with you.
Just got to enjoy the experience.
I totally agree. I think that, you know, the trailers are not just trying to give you a taste. The trailers are trying to sell you. And a lot of times they try to sell you by giving you the big reveals. And I don't want the big reveals until I'm sitting in my movie chair. So I totally agree with you. Giving stuff from the first 5 minutes of the movie, you know, for the majority of the trailer was brilliant. Dave, what do you say?
I love this movie. I went opening night, went my wife, my daughter, Teresa, my mother and my sister. So it was a mixed from 22 to 84. And everybody enjoyed it. And I'm going to throw out front, one of the things I liked the best is I didn't have to sit through Krypton dying again. I love the way they did it, where they just put it up on the screen like out of a comic book almost. You know, 3,000 years ago, the age of heroes began. 30 years ago, he arrived on Earth. 3 months ago, he became Superman. Beautiful. Everybody knows that almost. You don't need to beat it again. And I hope if they ever do a Batman movie, I don't have to see the Waynes shot down again. But I loved it. I thought it was shot fantastic. I liked the story. I liked the Silver Age beats. So I had a good time. And I just want to throw out something there. There's a lot of talk that this, you know, we came out of the movie and they were like, oh, you know, so what would you think? It's like, oh, I thought it was great. My wife was, I didn't want to tell you that I heard this was a very woke picture.
I heard that too, and I didn't really see it in the movie.
I don't see it as woke.
I was trying to look for what was woke, and my wife said to me, you know, what are they complaining about? I said, the closest thing I could come to was when he went for his second battle against the hammer of whatever, and he was laying in the big hole, that they had to have like a Muslim guy come and help him. That's the closest thing I could come up with. And even that was like nothing. But that was like stretching, trying to find something that people are complaining about.
Look, and I haven't hidden. You all know I'm not on the woke side. If you see this picture as anti-whatever, you're wrong. She's stirring stuff up where there is nothing. This was just a fun, enjoyable Superman movie.
Honestly, I think it is less what the movie is presenting and more what the people on either side of the aisle are sniping at each other with. And I don't want to get into that discussion, but I think that has more to do with it, that people are looking for ammunition against each other. And I'm not going to even say which side of the aisle is correct and which side isn't, because I don't think either one is correct. But I think that's more it than what the movie is. I think Gunn did a good job of just going right down the middle.
Fantastic.
Scott, you're up.
I, like Sean, have seen it twice. I'm glad I'm not the only one on this panel that has actually seen the movie twice. So it was absolutely killing me not being able to go to opening night. And I found out there was some sort of fan event where you could actually go before opening night. But the reason I didn't was my son wasn't available to go, with he and his girlfriend until Saturday. So I made him promise that I wouldn't go and see it without him, that we would all go together as a family and go see it. So we went Saturday afternoon, and I purposely tried to stay away from all, you know, after I watched the teaser and I watched the very first trailer. After that, if it came up on a commercial or whatever, I turned my head away. I changed the channel. I didn't read anything online. So I wanted to go in as non-spoilery as possible and just go in with an open mind and no, you know, as few preformed opinions as possible, and just take it at face value, and you know, do as much as possible to kind of turn off continuity brain and all the things that keep me from enjoying things like that, you know, like this normally. But I'll tell you, almost from the very start of the movie, now I'd seen the whole opener part because it was part of that trailer where he crashes in the snow. And I was a little shocked that that's how the movie started. But, you know, you see all that if you watch that trailer. But then when he rockets out of the fortress and we get the flying through the Arctic and flipping over, you know, through the ice flow and all that stuff. And then, you know, the credits, you know, the name comes Superman. I'm telling you, I was so happy. I had the biggest grin on my face. I had tears streaming down my face. I felt like a 10-year-old again, watching the first one. It just brought me back to that. I walked out of it really liking it a lot, but almost immediately it was weird. As you know, as soon as I left the theater, I had this weird, like, I don't know, almost like a melancholy hit me, and I couldn't quite shake it. I couldn't quite figure out like why do I feel this way? And everybody kept asking me, I kept getting messages and, you know, anything I would post online, you know, people, you know, so what'd you think? And it's like, I'm still processing, and I was processing for days. But you know, from the moment I walked out of that theater, I knew immediately that I wanted to go see it again. So I went a couple of nights ago after work, and I went and I saw it again in IMAX, just me by myself. And it was, I mean, absolutely thrilling. All the same emotions came back. I really got choked up at a significant number of parts of the movie, both emotional things and then things that just thrilled me, you know, that just fed my soul, you know, Superman moment, genuine Superman moments. And I got home and it was very late. I'd never been to where I had to go watch the movie at before. So by the time I made the trek back to the parking structure and got home and all that, it was really late, but my wife was still up and I walked in and she goes, "So what do you think?" And I said, "I think I love it." So yeah, it's not a perfect movie. No. But I have really very few qualms. And I think Paul, you've actually hit most of them already. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, did it give me what I wanted? Pretty much. And it felt like Superman. It gave me the things I really needed to walk away from, to be like, okay, that's my guy. He's back. Thank God, you know, this thing is finally headed in the right direction. So yeah, I was very happy with the movie.
So I'm gonna jump ahead a little bit to something I normally save till towards the end of the episodes, but get to it because it's one of my minor negatives, and it's very minor. From what I could tell, you know, when I watched this and I was watching closely, I'm really trying to pay attention as I'm watching. I'm trying to pay attention to everything because I know we're going to come on here. You know, we're recording this on a Thursday night. I saw it on Tuesday and I knew 2 days from now we're going to discuss this. So I want to be well-versed enough to discuss it. So I'm trying to watch closely. And outside of using the original score from Superman, I didn't think the score in this did anything to stand out. You know, when they weren't using those moments, I didn't think it was anything special. So that was my other, I can't even say negative, but something that I can't really go positive on. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that. If you guys listened to the score independently of the movie, or if you, you know, thought when you were watching it that you thought it was, you know, important in any way to you?
I actually listened to the entire score before seeing the film. And when Logan found it, my son found out I was doing that. He's like, you sure you want to be doing that? He goes, you know, did they give the track names? You know, because he was afraid.
The death of crypto.
Yeah, well, he was afraid I'd get, you know, like, you know, what was it? Phantom Menace famously
had the funeral, Qui-Gon's funeral.
So, you know, he's like, are you sure you want to do that? But I did. I gave it a listen. I really enjoyed it, but it is, I don't know if generic's a kind word. It's not generic, but it's not John Williams. It's not themey. Like, unless I'm just missing it, I didn't really get like a Mr. Terrific theme, a Guy Gardner theme, a Lois Lane theme. It was more of action movie background music.
Yeah, I think you said you don't want to pigeonhole it that way, but I think generic, if you eliminate the John Williams, you know, notes, right. I think it was very generic feeling.
Yeah. And I think the Justice, and I really hate calling them the Justice Gang, but I think the Justice Gang may have a theme, because when they come in, it's there's a flourish. I can't.
Isn't it sort of like a little bit of an electronic flourish with them?
It is. And it really, that's when it really occurred to me what the soundtrack as a whole reminded me of. And it reminds me an awful lot of when they went from very classical movie style scoring with Batman, the animated series, and Superman, the animated series. And then when they made the shift over to Justice League, I imagine it must've been a budgetary thing, even though they still had many of the same composers, you can obviously tell they're not doing full orchestra. A lot of it is synthetic and on keyboards and that sort of thing. And it has that sound to it to me, which is okay if it's done well. But I, you know, I'm old school film scores. I prefer, you know, big bombastic, you know, the London Symphony Orchestra, you know, that sort of thing. And you don't, it's not quite that. But it's growing on me. I find it very, strange though, that this is the second, you know, series, or, you know, the second, go round for Superman since Reeve using Williams' theme, but not using the entire theme. So like with Superman Returns, what was the guy's name? Ottman, that did the score for that, really favored the dun 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 dun. He favored that, but not so much the dun 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 dun. And this one is exactly the opposite. There's very little of the dun 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 dun, but there's an awful lot of the dun dun dun. So it's really ironic that, you know, they're both using the exact same theme, but each one choosing a different portion of that theme as opposed to the entire thing. I thought that was just kind of weird to note.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you're saying. And maybe over time, this one will grow on me more, but I think this one will be forgettable in favor of the John Williams score in my mind.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sean.
This is going to seem weird. Actually, I'm agreeing with everything that both of you are saying about the score. I was glad they threw in some portion of the John Williams, but I'm also glad that they didn't lean too heavy on it. And the reason being is, what I like about this film is this is not trying to be the Christopher Reeve films. I love those, by the way. I want to be very, very clear on what I'm saying here. But I think this film is so satisfying to me because of the fact that it feels like a really terrific Superman film that is not trying to be any of the ones that came beforehand. It has nods to them. It's definitely, you know, especially some of the characters like Tessmacher and all those pieces like Otis and all that. I mean, it's great to see all of those pieces, but I felt like they did a really good job of not trying to say this was Superman 7 or something like that, and instead allowing this to breathe and be its own thing. That being said, I geeked out when we did get the little beats that we did.
Right.
And I felt like that needed to happen, but not too much more than what they did. I did download the soundtrack. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but it says something that I also wasn't driven to, like, to go listen to that soundtrack. But I will say that I think they made the right choice to not make that soundtrack such a big part of it. But I agree that they could have done something more.
Now, I purposely in my mind said I'm not going to spend a lot of time comparing this to the prior Superman films because I think that's almost been done to death already. But I would just say, you know, what you, the criticism you just laid on the potential criticism that didn't come to pass, I think is what doomed, in my mind, Superman Returns. I think it got so bogged down trying to be the Richard Donner Superman that it wasn't, it never really presented as its own identity in any way. So this one, I agree, you know, Man of Steel was totally its own identity. And, you know, we have some debates on that because I know I enjoyed that more than others and I won't mention anybody's name. But then there's, you know, this one, I think tried to be its own character or its own characterization, but also gave, and as Dave mentioned, I think it was before we were recording, Dave said, you know, this feels like a Silver Age Superman or a Bronze Age Superman. And I think it does. So it's, you know, it didn't want to do the callback, but it did it in its own way. And I think that was what was key to it.
It was, it was like a Silver Age plus because it had all the stuff. I love crypto. I'm going to take off with that. I love crypto. I like the Kents being alive.
Yeah.
And I like that him and Lois were together. Yes, they weren't married, but they were together. And she knew he was Superman. It wasn't this, you know, oh, look at this bumbling dope I work with in the office. And the whole crew of the Daily Planet was Perry White smoking a cigar in Mr. Terrific's ship.
What was Steve Lombard was hilarious in it. They definitely added, I was afraid that Gunn might go over the top with humor in this, but he added like just enough. It was not over the top. I was afraid he was going to try and make it, you know, Guardians, which I love Guardians, but that's not Superman. He right. needed to give it its own identity. And I think he did. You know, I just saw, I don't know how it came up, but I was on YouTube and I was just looking at some stuff and they had when The Rock hosted Saturday Night Live and they did a thing where he was Clark Kent and everybody around him, it was Perry White and Lois Lane, like they know he's obviously Superman, but they're playing along and he's just doing such a bad job of hiding it. Like, you know, like the Superman blue cuffs are coming out from the white part of his, you know, button-down shirt. You could see some over his collar, and they're just like, "Oh yes, you're nothing like Superman," you know, like, and they're like winking at each other as they say it. It was very funny.
Well, they even threw the gag in there about, "Oh, he's got glasses that hypnotize people,"
which people make fun of over and over again, and now they're putting it into the lore and effectively. Like in a good way. I love, you know, it's I love that they were able to do that. And I got to say, you know, right off the bat, my favorite thing in this movie, bar none, was Crypto. I just thought he was so much fun. You know, I grew up loving that character. Just, you know, everybody wanted Crypto as their dog. And I'm just, you know, I was thrilled to see him portrayed that way. And like, what is it? He says, not even a very good dog. But he was just a great character in the movie. And the movie was far from sold out, but when they took Crypto down in the, during the fight, you could hear like an audible gasp from the audience.
Yeah.
So, you know, that it was very well played. Let's talk about David Cornsweet, because I never heard of him before this.
Me neither.
I thought he was. He's not gonna replace Christopher Reeve or George Reeve as my Superman, but he's really good. You know, I gotta say, I thought Brandon Routh was okay. I don't think he had a lot of material to work with, and I thought Henry Cavill was okay, but I didn't think he had the right material to work with. So I don't think there's been like a real bad casting on cinematic Superman. I'm trying to think about it on TV. I never really was into Lois and Clark, but I don't think Dean Cain would be a Superman that I would I really liked TJ. Did you? Okay.
I liked his Clark Kent better than his Superman.
And, I liked Clark Kent with his parents better than Superman, because there was three characters he played. And I felt like the Clark that we got when he was with his parents. I don't want to go too far off the rabbit hole in that one, though, but I'm a fan.
And I was a fan of Tom Welling's portrayal. So most of the people who've played the character, I think, have been fine. And the criticism I would have would be more towards material than it would be towards the casting of any of these characters. I thought Cornsweet did a good job of portraying him. I thought he did a good job of showing vulnerability and, you know, much in a different way, but much like Captain America in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he was totally earnest in everything he did, and it was believable, and it didn't feel corny. You know, he wanted to take that giant kaiju monster
to an intergalactic zoo
instead of killing it. He saved the squirrel. You could see clearly he tried to see the good in everybody. And I kind of like that about the character. You know, that's one of the things I like about Superman in general. He can be that way without being a country bumpkin nerd. And but I think that's what he needed to be portrayed as, and I think he was. Go ahead, Dave.
Even the plot line about stopping the war, to me, that was like out of those original comics, you know, where they're trying to talk about Germany and they're mentioning phony countries. To me, that was exactly that out of the comics.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I got that vibe too. I like that.
I like that it's Clark Kent. Had a strong, not even, it wasn't just the way he acted. There was a visual difference. The hair, it wasn't just the glasses. There was a whole different presence to Clark Kent. And that's hard to pull off. And I thought he did a very, very good job. Yes, we know, you know, as viewers, and you don't want to go too crazy with it, but man, they did a pretty good job of like making it where like, I get why people don't think that he's Superman. And I thought I think they did a very good job with that. There's some subtle things. His hair was drastically different, and I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, it wasn't just putting the spit curl up.
Yeah.
Or slicking his hair back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was a very good thing. I liked Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane. I thought, and I heard criticism that, oh, you know, she wasn't the investigative reporter that you want to see. I thought she presented as tough, and that she was going, you know, she went to the Justice Gang to get them to do what she needed to do. I think she stood up to them. I don't, you know, she showed her strength when she did the interview of Clark. But I thought she also was not just the damsel in distress. And I thought that's, you know, a key thing that they needed to do. And I think they did that well, too. I really liked her as Lois. And I think if we get enough presentation of her in this part, she could become my Lois Lane go-to.
She is now my favorite Lois Lane. And I tell you, for two reasons, is that for one, I finally see what Superman sees in Lois with this actress because she's drop dead gorgeous. But also there's a great moment between them where she points out that they really are, at least in this iteration, they are opposites attract. And when she pointed that out, I was like, yep, that's perfect, because that's how real relationships work in the real world. 9 times out of 10 is that, you know, the man and the woman are usually very different and sometimes polar opposite personalities. And these two are very different. And she points out those differences, and that just made it more realistic to me. And I really like that they're drawn to each other. They're attracted to each other because they are opposite personalities. I thought that was really brilliant in the writing and everything. I really liked that. But yeah, I enjoyed her a lot.
I'll ask you one thing. She wasn't falling over herself trying to get him to marry her.
Right.
You know,
right.
In fact, if anything, she was like, "Oh, I don't think, you know, I don't think I should be with you. You know, we're not going to work out together."
Yeah, it's not going to work.
You know, he told her, you know, it wasn't the Han Solo moment, but he told her he loved her, and she just looked at him. You know, she didn't tell him she loved him back until whatever, an hour later in the movie.
Right.
I thought that was key. I thought, you know, she was in her own way playing hard to get, you know, and the Lois Lane that's constantly trying to trap Superman into marrying her or to show that he's Superman. I mean, I liked the fact that she already knew he was Superman and didn't have to go through any of that stupidity. And I shouldn't even say it that way because I enjoyed Margot Kidder doing that. But but just the same, I'm glad we could bypass that and get on to a more mature relationship. And right. I also like, though, that when the Justice Gang knew who he was, she was like, oh, he's too damn trusting of everybody.
I like that she called him the task in the bullpen, like in the way that it was handled. I thought that was he thought that they were she was playing it up. She was being serious, and I really liked the way that that played out because it showed some of her experience in the field. I thought it was a cool sequence.
Yeah, I agree. I thought she was very well represented in this. I think the MVP acting wise in this was Nicholas Hoult as Lex Luthor. I thought he was outstanding. In fact, you know, at the end when there's the confrontation, you know, he and Superman have, you know, each have an opportunity to present their impassioned speech about why they believe what they believe. And I kind of thought he blew Superman away on that one. So I thought he was great in the part. I thought he chewed up the scenery and I thought he earned it. I thought he was great.
Yeah, he was very good.
That's it.
It was all right.
Nobody's got anything else to add.
he was going to kill the dog. How could you like him?
I like that he was a true evil. Like we've seen a lot of great in the comics iterations of Lex Luthor. You know, good, bad, everything in between. And I felt like this was like our first real big screen where he was not a comedic bad guy. And don't get me wrong, I like the other versions of Lex Luthor we've got, so I'm not knocking them. But I just like that this one, I did not like him. I wanted Superman to get him. And I mean, it was great. I mean, and I felt like he was dangerous, like truly dangerous and ruthless.
And there was no land swindle involved.
He was getting the part of that country.
Yeah,
I guess you're right. You can't get away from it.
But that was all in an effort to manipulate things against Superman anyway, so it didn't really matter. But I'm loath to place anybody above Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, but Gene Hackman was really playing Gene Hackman, and he had the charisma and appeal to be really good because he's Gene Hackman. This guy was playing Lex Luthor.
Yep. Did anybody think he was too young for the part?
No. You have that
I thought? I thought he was almost a little too slim for the part.
Because the version of Lex that he's playing, at least in my mind, you know, by playing Marv Wolfman's businessman Lex, you know, Lex Cor Lex, even though they called it Luthor Cor in this, to me, I have a particular visual in my head for that character. And that visual leans more towards like Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin than Nicholas Hoult. And that makes me very conflicted because not only do I really like Nicholas Hoult as an actor, I've enjoyed him in everything I've ever seen him in. I think he's a phenomenal actor. I think he was phenomenal in this. However, you can be phenomenal and miscast at the same time, I think. And I feel like he was only because the one thing he can't fix is his age. And I think I don't know what age Nicholas Hoult really is, but to me, he looks like a 20 something. So he just seems far too young for the role that he's playing and in the part that he's playing, because this Lex, and now we didn't ever get, you know, the scene of him, you know, claiming to have built Metropolis and all that, like, you know, from the comic, you know, from the Byrne era comics, but I'm assuming he's supposed to be similar, if not that version of Lex, where he built this town and it's all his. And one of the reasons he resents Superman is that, you know, he was top dog in Metropolis, effectively king of Metropolis. And now this guy flies in and everybody fawns over him and Lex is kind of bumped to the back burner. I don't know that they're going to go that direction, but if that's the version that it is, then he should be significantly older. You know, he should be in like his
40s. He's 35 years old, by the way.
Is he really?
35 years old, which makes him kind of a contemporary of Superman.
Yeah.
Which I think that's what they should be, contemporaries.
I don't know. Like I said, it's a minor criticism. I mean, it didn't like take me out of the movie or anything, but it was definitely one of those things that I noticed, and it bothered me just a little bit, that I was just like, yeah, he's great, but he's just too damn young for the role type of thing. But yeah.
Unless he inherited from his father.
Yeah.
More
I mean,
like Smallville.
Yeah, I mean, there could definitely be, differences. He might not be, he may be businessman Luther, but he's just not quite that version of businessman Luther, where he actually built the city type of thing and all that. So who knows?
I just thought he should have been a stockier character. Not even saying Vincent D'Onofrio, but just he was so rail thin.
Yeah.
Well, I would not have minded
people like that.
I would not have minded if we had a scene at the end when they had the confrontation, and if all of a sudden he donned the 1970s Lex Luthor super suit and actually had a little physical confrontation with Superman. Yeah.
Or Perez's 80s power suit would have been really cool too. I like that one. I wanted to go back to Clark Kent for a moment.
Sure.
We really didn't get much of him. What did you think of that? We got him, but we got more of Steve Lombard than we got of Clark Kent. And I thought that was kind of weird. And I point that out because something occurred to me on the drive home from viewing it the first time. I'm like, wait, did he? No, I don't think he did. So when I watched it again, I made a point to really pay attention. Now, if you were to ask me for a couple of things that I'd absolutely have to have in a Superman movie to feel like it was a Superman movie, probably the top two things would be he's got to catch something falling out of the air, like a helicopter or an airplane, which he did in the original, and then he did in Superman Returns to awesome effect. I mean, that's the moment of that movie.
Yeah.
And he's got to have an awesome shirt rip. There are no shirt rips in this. We get Clark Kent for just a minute. We never get Clark Kent changing to Superman. And when I consciously realized that, I was like, holy crap, that's quintessential Superman. And they didn't do it. And the whole movie still works anyway. So that's something of a minor miracle. I feel like they pulled off.
Yeah. I think they consciously limited the amount of Clark Kent because I think they felt people wanted, there's been a lot of talk of what people want. And I think there's been a lot of disagreements as to what people want. You know, people have said over the years that they wanted a credible threat, something that could physically stand up to Superman. I think he was depowered a little bit in this in order to allow for that. But I think that worked to good effect in my mind. He wasn't the, I can push the Earth out of its orbit Superman, but right. He was incredibly powerful just the same. But we get the battle at the very beginning, which, very interesting choice that we open the movie with. He just lost his first fight ever. And that's pretty pretty interesting choice. But what it does is it gives you a little drama. You see him there bleeding and broken, and yet they didn't have to expend all of their budget to create that, bring us to that moment. And then they still give us the battle with what is the hammer of whatever, Bratislava. Right. And we still get the battle with him, and you ultimately see that it's Luthor calling the shots on that. And I'm going to jump from that to, did any of you kind of come up with the conclusion that that was going to be a Superman clone, early on, or did it not happen till his mask came off? Because I did not.
Logan and I both were absolutely stunned when he pulled his mask off and it wasn't Henry Cavill, because we both believed that.
That would have been cool, actually.
Yeah,
that would have been a good idea.
I think we had read it or seen it out there as a rumor or something, but I totally believed it. I really thought that was going to turn out to be him. And I'm actually a little bit disappointed it wasn't, because I think It really should have been, because that's
Henry Cavill as a clone of Superman
and Henry Cavill as Ultraman, because that's essentially who he was playing in those movies anyway, in my opinion. So
that was his name. That was what they called him.
What?
They called him Ultraman.
No, I mean, in those other movies, that's the character that Henry Cavill was playing. So why not bring him over and have him play?
All right. I misunderstood you. But you expected him to be a clone of Superman all along?
Oh yeah, yeah. When you know, because how else did Lex get into the fortress? So when
I did not know until they told me that he got his hair and DNA from that.
Well, plus Ultraman I thought Ultraman was going to not so much turn out to be a clone as I thought Ultraman was going to be the Superman of Earth 3, like he was in the pre-crisis DC. Because, you know, by that point, we're already getting the whole thing with, Lex Luthor messing around with dimensional rifts and pocket universes and all that. So I thought he had simply just gone to another Earth and gotten an evil Superman. And that's who Ultraman was going to turn out to be, was literally, you know, the Ultraman from the comics, or at least the pre-crisis comics. So I was a little surprised in that aspect that they just went the whole clone route. But that was perfectly fine to me as well. But the shock for me wasn't so much who he was revealed to be is who he wasn't revealed to be. Because I'm being completely serious. When Logan and I both turned to each other and said, "Hey, I thought that was supposed to be Henry Cavill," because we really both thought that, you know,
it would have been cool.
I was figuring that too, and I'm kind of torn because one of the things I do think that's good about this film is that it stands on its own.
Yes,
like there wasn't like those cameos that were like put in place to link this.
Yeah,
to anything that's come before, and I think this film's better served by that. But I say that, and I'm gonna contradict myself. I would have been geeking out if it was Henry Cavill. So that would have worked for me too.
Yeah, we kept going back and forth because originally I figured it was going to be a clone, and then when he kept saying how dumb the clone was, I said, he's going to turn out to be Bizarro. Mm-hmm.
But then my guess is that he is going to turn out to be Bizarro
when he returns. Sequel. See, but when they opened up the pocket universe, I said to Teresa, "Well, maybe he really is Ultraman from Earth 3."
Right. Paul, I wanted to go back to something you had said, and thank you very much for saying it, because if we got through this whole episode and I forgot to address this point, I would really be kicking myself later. So, as you said, there has been an awful lot of criticism about Superman's power level in this movie and about him, getting beat up and just, you know, all that, you know, there's been a lot of criticism, too much in my opinion. But that's one of the things that a lot of people seem to keep focusing on is, that Superman, you know, takes a beating and that sort of thing in this. And all I've got to say for that is, you know, pick a lane, people. I've been a Superman fan all of my life. I am 57 years old. And while, you know, geek has become chic in our lifetimes, I still inside of me have that little kid that used to get picked on the playground and at the bus stop and on the school bus and everything that, "Oh, you read comic books? Oh, you like Superman? Superman's, you know, blah, blah, blah." And, you know, the big criticism I've taken all my life about being a Superman fan is that he's boring. And that he's way too powerful. Now you've got a Superman that has been humanized a bit, and a Superman that's, for the first time in one of these movies, facing a threat that's just as powerful, possibly more powerful than him, and he takes a beating and he takes some licks in this, and everybody's criticizing, "Oh, he's not powerful enough. Oh, what a wuss." It's like, it's one or the other. It can't be both. Is he too powerful and too boring because he's so powerful? Or is he not powerful enough? Which is it, people? You stop with this. It's making me nuts.
Yeah, I agree with you. Pick a lane.
They also have a storytelling reason for him being depowered. He gets hurt multiple times in the film and never lets himself fully heal.
Right. Like
if you go back to the fortress sequence, he never lets himself fully heal. The robots clearly state that.
Yeah, he's 87% healed.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, and when he has the whole metamorpho sequence with the kryptonite and all that, yeah, he used that fake sun that he made up to get him back up and running, but it was clear that the man was not fully healed again for all of that. So they actually did it in storytelling. where
right.
they were showcasing the fact that he's been through some things that he never let himself get to 100% because he was being Superman, you know, right. and putting the needs of others ahead of his own.
Something else that occurred to me in this is that I really wasn't sure I was going to like the whole kaiju thing. Seeing that in some of the promotional stuff and everything. And I was like, I don't know, you know, cause when they get a little too fanciful in the comics with Metropolis and stuff, sometimes that stuff loses me. So I wasn't sure I was going to like that. I ended up really liking it because I liked the reason for why it was there, you know, a distraction created by Luthor and all that. So it wasn't just, you know, Godzilla wandering out of the ocean kind of thing. It was, you know, scientifically created by Luthor or maybe stolen from another dimension or whatever. But something occurred to me. I feel like they missed an opportunity. What if it had been Titano?
that occurred to me as well.
I thought that would have been really cool.
What did you like the fact that before he grew, he was Stitch?
Yeah, he was essentially Stitch, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
And I think you know, Disney could sue them over that if they wanted. but I thought of the Titano thing too, but I thought that might be a little bit, you know, a little too much inside baseball. For the viewers, you know, again, I do have to curb my expectations a little bit with the thought that they do need to play to a non-comic book audience as well as the comic book audience. And I think this movie really played to the comic book audience. So I can't criticize them for when they decided to go, you know, a little bit more down the middle without the reference.
Right.
So let me ask.
Go ahead, Dave.
In the Hall of Justice, which is a railway station, I think, in Ohio, actually. Cincinnati. They have the postage stamp. Were those mosaics of the Justice Society?
Some of them.
That's what it looked like to
me. Some of them. The ones I caught in the, because I was really paying attention to that when I watched it in IMAX. And the one that I caught in the IMAX, I've been meaning to look this guy's name up because I recognize him visually, but I always get his name wrong. I want to call him the Shining Knight, and I know that's not right because Shining Knight's got the red and gold outfit. He was a member of the All-Star. This is the knight character that was in silver chainmail and had the full head mask on, like the Black Knight in Monty Python's Holy Grail. And I think his name is the Silent Knight. Does that sound right? Does that ring a bell with anybody?
I'm not sure.
But he's definitely in. So there's either two murals or it's a big wraparound mural. But the one essentially, if you're standing in the hall looking out the front, like out the windows, it was the one on the right hand side. And he was like the first character up there. It was that knight character. And then I remember spotting some other characters, but the ones I was specifically trying to point out were the different JSAers, and Wildcat was pretty easy to pick out there. I'm trying to remember who else I saw in there, but I saw something online where somebody was trying to identify some of the other characters and somebody said Amethyst is in there, which kind of surprised me. I didn't see that myself, but I saw that online somewhere that somebody had said that, but yeah, there were a lot. It wasn't just Justice Society people, although there were a number of Justice Society people, but there were Vibe, for example, was up there as well, was one of the characters from Justice League Detroit.
Right.
Was up there. So yeah, that's interesting because it adds to the universe, but it also makes you wonder, like, okay, how does this DC work exactly, because it doesn't look like the Justice League exists yet or exists right at the moment, because you've got this Justice Gang, but clearly there must have been a Justice Society at some point in the past, I guess.
I think that's exactly what it is, and I think they left themselves wide open to do whatever they wanted with the intro, you know, 300 years ago super being started to exist in this world. So they have a 300-year window that they can play with as far as past developments and what went on. And clearly in this movie, you know, the Justice Gang, and I'm not crazy about that name either, but I think you're not supposed to be. They, you know, they exist as well as Superman, and they're accepted for existing. So it's not a world that is not used to having super beings around.
Right.
So they're again, they leave themselves wide open to give as much history and prequel information for the universe. I don't know about you'd have much prequel stuff for, you know, Clark Kent and Superman, but I do think you could have, you know, a Justice Society that existed during World War II or something along those lines. And it fits perfectly in there because they didn't make it seem like this is the first superhero.
Right, right.
God, so I think it all works.
Yeah.
And I, you know, what did you think of the portrayal of the Justice Gang, of the different characters?
I tell you, I didn't think anything would ever really make me love Guy Gardner, but Nathan Fillion pulled it off.
I mean, apparently he was adamant that he had to have that hair that way.
Yeah, yeah.
That they were going to try and, you know, do it a little differently, and he pushed the whole idea. I also found him to be just fun. He was a good comic relief guy.
I mean, honestly, the only criticism I could think of, and this is an extremely minor criticism, is that I feel like it should have been a bigger team because, I mean, there's only three of them. Yeah. So
well, now there's four.
With Metamorpho. but for what we got, I really, you know, Green Lantern was, you know, Guy Gardner was really, I actually really liked his character.
I loved that at the end when they were breaking up the war, that his constructs were giving the people the middle finger.
Yep, yep.
I was cracking up during that.
And, you know, Mr. Terrific, of course, you know, I've always liked that character anyway. But, yeah, he really got I like that he really got the moment to shine. You know, he had the Quicksilver moment of the movie that I really liked. And then Hawk Girl. I presume it's Hawk Girl. I haven't actually seen. Is it Hawk Girl or Hawk Woman? One of the two. But anyway, she was fine. I thought she was a little small. I picture Hawk Girl as more, I don't know, just
Hawk Girl.
more statuesque, I guess. You know, more Amazon like. I didn't get the thing with the cry. I was like, why does she scream every single time? That's Black Canary. That's not Hawk Girl. I didn't get that.
She's one of the Silver Hawks.
I guess. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I thought they were pretty cool.
So is Metropolis in Delaware?
In the movie it is.
Yeah, I noticed Lois's license plate was Delaware. Yeah.
That was an interesting an interesting choice.
Wasn't there something in the 70s in the comics that was like in Delaware or something like that?
Yeah, it's always been one of those kind of nebulous things. I think it was, I could be wrong about this, but I think it was Superman the movie that placed both Metropolis in New York and Smallville in Kansas. Now, the Smallville thing is pretty much stuck, but apparently now the Metropolis thing is unstuck because now they're back to the whole Delaware thing. I don't know. Personally, I always liked Metropolis being New York.
I was always under the impression Metropolis is New York and Gotham is Jersey.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. You know, one of the big questions then to throw out to you is, Superman's biological parents, is that message that they uncovered real or did they create that?
It's funny because when we were walking out of the movie, Logan and I were talking and I said, you know, I'm supposed to do an episode with the guys talking about this movie. I said, you know what? I've got a take that I think it's going to shock the hell out of them. He goes, what's that? And I said, the whole thing with the parents. And he was like, oh yeah. And he goes, and I told him, I said, doesn't bother me. He's like, really? He goes, they're going to be surprised to hear that, I think. But yeah, it didn't bother me. And I'll tell you why it didn't bother me is that ultimately it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter one way or the other, whether they were telling him to come and serve humanity like Marlon Brando did in the original, or whether they were telling him to come and rule the planet. It doesn't matter because I feel like the point of this particular movie was for him to develop a closer connection to his foster parents and to realize that they were the ones that raised him. They were the ones that gave him his moral center and are his moral compass, and to embrace that. And I think that's why at the end of the movie, you have him in the fortress watching those clips and everything and realizing that that's his foundation right there. That's the thing that grounds him and makes him a human being, are those parents. And I really liked that. That to me was, that's where I feel like the people, not to backpedal into this stupid woke thing, but the people that are focusing on this ridiculous thing that's going around the internet now about the woke and the immigrant thing and all that, I think they're missing the point of all of what this movie is trying to tell you, is that, you know, ultimately Superman acknowledges his roots, but that doesn't form him into the person he is. He's basically the perfect immigrant because he comes here, he becomes a productive and positive member of the society and fully integrates into that society and becomes, you know, an inspirational figure. And I think that's the message people need to be looking at and taking away from this movie, not trying to twist the narrative to serve, you know, their own political axe grinding. And I thought that was really beautiful. I really liked that. So yeah, the whole thing with Jarl and Lara, I mean, I can see where it may really irritate some people. It really didn't bother me because I think it's kind of inconsequential.
I go back and forth on that a little bit because I do just like them being, you know, just as inspirational in their own way as the Kents. So I do kind of like that aspect. But if you're going to present it this way, what you're doing is you're making Clark / Superman a more his own man.
Yes.
That, you know, he takes what inspiration he can, but he also is ready to just make his own decision and reject what he doesn't think is right. You know, the whole, you know, his being like the ultimate optimist, the way it's being portrayed earlier in the movie, is borne out by the fact that he's not going to accept, you know, he's not going to say, oh, well, this is my purpose, so I'm going to switch over and now I'm going to become evil Superman. You know, that doesn't happen. He doesn't even question his own existence at that point. I liked that they didn't give him that moment where he wondered, oh, what should I be doing? No, he just stayed true to his values. And I think that makes him more of a three-dimensional character.
Right. See, my only real moment with the Jor-El and Laura thing is I was thinking about it later. Like I say, it didn't bother me at all, but I did think about, does it disservice the characters? You know, does it disservice, you know, who they are as people? Because I like a certain version of especially Jor-El, as, you know, he in his own way is just as noble and everything as his son. And I like that kind of Silver Age version of him.
They can still go back to that, though.
They could, but ultimately I don't think so. And here's why, is that I don't think their message, while I could easily see where the people of Earth would be frightened by it and think of it as evil, I don't think at its core it's intended that they're evil people for telling him come there and rule the planet. You have to realize that this is an incredibly advanced alien civilization, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of years ahead of us technologically, and probably in a lot of other ways too. So they're looking at basically they're coming and like kind of in a colonial fashion, they are uplifting the savages type of thing, you know, and putting them on the proper Kryptonian. So that's how I see it, is that, you know, this version of Jor-El and Lara, I've seen it online, you know, people trying to portray them as, oh, and suddenly they're evil. No, I don't think they're evil. It's that they don't see what they're telling him, if the message is real, as doing something wrong. It's just that's their society. They come from an incredibly advanced alien society, and they're telling their son to go forth and bring these people up in the proper Kryptonian way and, you know, so.
So we're the primitive screw heads in this situation.
Basically. Yeah,
pretty much.
I like that it gave Jonathan something else other than that he cries. Because I thought that sequence, we had this moment where he said the right things to Clark.
Yes.
And that could have been a moment where they could have written the dialogue being, well, that was our upbringing and what we did with you. He didn't say that. What right. he said to him was, it says something about you that you thought this is what the end of the message was.
Right.
And he really empowered him. I thought that was a great moment between them. I thought it was really clever dialogue, and it said something about Jonathan Kent as a father, where it, he wasn't taking the bow for himself. He was empowering his kid. And I thought that was just a really cool sequence. And I like that it was troubling, because it troubled me too, because I don't want that out of Jor-El and Lara. But I like that Superman didn't either. And I felt like I was riding along with him in that. And Jonathan Kent coming in is with the MVP home run out of the park was something I really liked about that sequence, because it gave us a chance to see some substance to the Kents.
Now, I did see some criticism about the Kents that, you know, they're presented too much as being like country bumpkins and all of that. And I reject that criticism, because I think it showed how Clark grew up in this non-electronic world. He wasn't the kid who was sitting there on his cell phone the whole time. He was learning how to be, you know, he was learning how to be a man by from his family. And I think that goes to his character and goes to his, you know, his upbringing. And I think it makes them admirable, you know, and I don't think they're country bumpkins, because I just think they were non-sophisticated when it came to, you know, electronics and that kind of crap.
I think Martha may have been laying it on a little thick. I loved Jonathan Kent, you know, in a movie that choked me up multiple times. That was the number one lump in the throat moment for me, was the moment with Jonathan and Clark.
You know, I was sitting there saying, don't let him die now. Do not.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But when he's trying to tell Clark how proud he is, and he actually like, his voice breaks, that got me. I mean, it just really right there in the theater really destroyed me. I was like, that's perfect. That was my favorite moment. I really liked that. I didn't like Martha, but she just, you know, my own wife who, you know, effectively, you know, my wife is a, you know, was a small town Georgia girl. She said she thought that Martha's hickness was a little over the top. So yeah, I thought so too. A lot of that was the accent. The Kansans really have that thick hillbilly accent.
I don't know if anybody lives there who's listening, let us know. the other character who I felt is now my portrayal of that character, he's going to be the lead. I loved the way they presented Jimmy Olsen in this. he wasn't the cub reporter from The Adventures of Superman. He was, you know, he had a usefulness for himself, but he still had the, you know, the don't call me chief moment with Perry White. I really loved the way he was portrayed in this. I thought he was terrific. He added something to the movie instead of just being, you know, extra there. I really liked him in this.
I liked how Miss Teshmaka turned out to not be such a dope after all.
Right.
Taking all the selfies, but really taking a picture of what was in the background.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, he was, you know, she had to be afraid of what he might do, because we saw that he puts ex-girlfriends into his pocket universe because they blogged about him. So, you know, she had to be very careful about how to get out of it. He's like throwing cups at her or throwing pens at her, whatever he was throwing. You know, she was smarter than she let on.
Did one of those guys give you a vibe of Dabney Donovan from the comic books? One of Luthor's henchmen, the guy with the mustache.
I think the guy who was with the guy with the mustache was named Otis.
But the guy with the mustache. Did you get a Dabney Donovan vibe?
I'm trying to remember who Dabney Donovan is. I recognize the name.
The one who created all the alien.
Oh, right. oh yeah, that might be who he was supposed to be. Now that you say, because I kept looking at that guy, going, is he supposed to be somebody?
Because he's like with the kaiju thing too, right?
That's right. Oh yeah, that makes perfect. I didn't catch that, and now I feel stupid for not catching it. Yeah. No, yeah, I think you might be right.
If you didn't catch in the credits, that's where they actually gave her the name Test Marker, because they never say it.
Right.
But it's also Otis's last name is Berg.
Was it really? Oh, that's awesome.
It's a little bitty place.
That's awesome. What did you think of Wendell Pierce as Perry White?
I thought he was fine. I thought he was fine. I have no problem with his casting. I think he could have used a bigger part, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I wish they'd given him more to do, because I really, really like that actor a lot. Yeah,
he's got normally a presence.
Yeah. You know, normally when they do the whole race swapping thing, it greatly annoys me when it's like a classic character like that. But when I found out it was him, I'm like, oh, I'm good with that, because I love that guy. He's a great actor. But
he has the presence for the part.
He does. I just didn't feel like he had enough to do. And I would have loved to have gotten at least one Great Caesar's Ghost out of him. That would have been nice.
That's all he needed was to say that once.
Yep.
But we did get the "Don't Call Me Chief" moment.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Anything else do we have to talk about on this?
No, I don't think so. I like that that Dave backed me up without realizing it, that I also don't think that Ultraman is dead.
And, I don't think so.
I really hope that that's revealed later on, because when I saw the movie the first time, that was one of the things I walked out going, oh God, everybody's going to seize on that. No, see, you know, this Superman kills people too. No. But I don't think he killed him. And I don't think, even if Ultraman doesn't survive the black hole, Superman didn't like murder him. You know, he was trying to get the guy off of him. So I don't think he intended for him to die by those actions. He was just trying to get the guy off of him.
It takes him off the table without killing him.
Right.
He's imprisoned there. Maybe he shows up again.
Maybe he's Bizarro.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, okay. I've been spending two days.
I thought maybe that's how he got to Earth 3.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, that would be interesting. I don't think they could ever do it, but if somehow he went to an alternate Earth and then he became kind of the Ultraman of Earth 3 from the comics, that would be an interesting move. I don't think they'll ever do that.
You know, I think it's
more likely we're going to get Bizarro.
I'd be happy with that, though, if over the course of, you know, several movies, if he puts together the crime syndicate and they're the big bad, because I've already seen that conversation start, in the chat groups and all. It's like, okay, if this nascent DC cinematic universe builds to a big bad like the Marvel cinematic universe did with Thanos, who would you want it to be? And I got to be honest, so far, all I can think of is who I don't want it to be. And that's very
Darkseid.
Yeah, I don't want it to be Darkseid.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because we had this conversation last night, Teresa and I. And it was like, she's like, wouldn't you want to see Darkseid? And I went, no.
No.
But no, it's you know, it would just be kind of echoing what they did in the MCU. So,
right.
You know, do something new, because it's too close to Thanos.
I would like to see Brainiac.
I think Brainiac? That's got to be the next movie. I think Brainiac has got to be the next movie. Mm-hmm.
Well, I see that as like next movie. You know, I've got a long line of like Superman villains I'd like to see for future movies. But I'm talking like, and I presume these people meant like the universe coming together to battle a threat. You know, all the whatever other movies they're planning to do. You know, they all form together to, I guess, the Justice League. Who are they fighting? Who's the big bad?
And, well, they certainly made Brainiac a worthwhile villain for the Justice League to fight in Justice League Unlimited.
Right.
So if they played it, if they built it up the way they did in that, I'm good with it.
I think the Crime Syndicate could be a really good one.
Well, it would definitely be something we haven't seen that we'd all like to see.
Right. Yeah. If they did them comic book faithful, I'd be really down for that.
Yeah,
I'll throw out what we came up with last night real quick. an opening montage of the lesser villains just getting picked up, you know, like capturing the toy man, maybe the prankster, so, where you don't have a whole, you know, just a montage, and then you move on to whoever the big bad is.
Or you could do an opening scene like a Bond movie.
Yes.
Where he fights one of the lesser ones. I mean, they did do that to not perfect effect, but they did that in Amazing Spider-Man 2, where he fought the Rhino in the opening scene.
Right, right.
You know, it wasn't a bad idea. It may not have been executed as well as it could have been, but it wasn't a bad idea. So I've spent the last 2 days battling in my brain to say, where am I going to find this? And trying to eliminate the recency bias, because recency bias tells me this is Jaws. But I keep saying, well, you know, it's not a perfect movie. So, you know what? I can't give it a Jaws. And I landed very, very firmly in Jaws 2. I think it's absolutely rewatchable. I don't think I'm going to have any problem watching this multiple times, and I'm going to get a kick out of it over and over again. So I really, really enjoyed this. And I think to some extent my geekness might make it Jaws, but I think as a critic for the masses, I got to say Jaws 2.
I struggled with that too. For my first viewing, I was comparing it heavily to the Christopher Reeve movies. And I was putting, you know, Superman 1 and then Superman 2 and the watchability of those. And then this was going to be Superman 3, so that makes it Jaws 2 and all of those pieces in there. My second viewing, I threw that completely out the window. I applaud you for being able to think of the masses. My geekiness is winning out for this one. This is Jaws. I love this. I can't wait to see it again. I've already pre-ordered it. I'm hoping this gives me what those other two movies has done all these years. This movie that I just want to rewatch over and over again. I'd like to see it in the theater again before it leaves. And I would nowadays, there's my economics of time as far as going to the movies is not what it used to be. I love seeing films in the theater. So for me to go and see something again in the theater says a lot about that film. I want to see this a third time in the theater. I actually like to see it in IMAX, just because I haven't seen it that way yet. But it's that kind of film for me. It just made me happy. I just love that aspect of it. There was something really positive about it. And I think that if anybody's crabby about this film, that's getting lost. This is a film that's supposed to make you feel good. And man, this one did.
Scott should have the last word, so I'll jump in here. I'm not as sophisticated in my critiques. This is Jaws to me. I had a blast. I went in a little bit, oh, I hope they're not going to screw this up. That's what I kept thinking. I came out fully satisfied. I'm really happy with it. I love the dog. I love where it's going. God, I would love to have a crypto myself. So, Jaws all the way.
See, I'm with Paul. I worry too much about fresh car smell. So I don't want to unfairly praise the movie where multiple viewings might reveal more cracks and that sort of thing. But I mean the highest praise I can possibly think of personally to give this movie is the fact of, for one thing, in the past 30 years, the list of movies that I've gone to the theater to see more than once is incredibly short. The list of movies I've gone to the actual theater to see more than twice, I can't think of a single one off the top of my head, with the possible exception of one or two of the early Marvel films. But I'm not even positive of that. I think most of them I saw twice at the max. And I mean, I've already seen this twice and I want to go see it again. And possibly even again, because I'm considering going and seeing it in 3D as well. Just to see it. And this is a guy that literally I have a movie theater in my home. So I could easily just wait a few months and watch it at my leisure, but I want to go experience again you know, experience it again in a packed movie theater like I did the first two times, and feed off that vibe of everybody else feeling the joy that I'm feeling watching this movie. So all that said, I'm going to go a very, very solid Jaws 2 on this, with the possibility that over time it may become a Jaws. I can very easily see that happening, but I'm going to put that distance in there only because, as Paul said, you know, the whole recency factor to it. So, yeah, but an incredibly solid Jaws 2 that I literally can't wait to go see this movie again. I might try to sneak out of the house and go see it again this weekend. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And any criticisms I have of it are, at the moment, are minuscule compared to just how happy this movie makes me.
Same here. Before we close out, I just wanted to mention to everybody listening that I did not listen yet because I didn't want to get tainted by knowing things beforehand. But I believe that this episode would be a tremendous companion piece to the latest episode of Raging Bullets that Sean and Jim did, because I know they went on at length about the movie as well. So I'd say, if you haven't listened to that yet, when you're done with this, listen to that. And that's what I'm going to do. So go ahead and do that. And thank you guys for coming on and doing this with us. And everybody listening, thank you. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Lex, I tried to stop him.
It's fine, Heather. Superman, we finally meet. Would you like a coffee?
Where's the dog?
Dog?
The dog, loser! You took the dog!
That's right, you get all of this.
Where's the dog?
I have no clue what you're talking about.
He's just a dog.
I don't know what dog you're talking about. Ugly dog and cute.
What did you say?